All right, so as I said, chapter 19 is really the preparation to give the children of Israel the 10 commandments. You know, the Lord is gonna provide those commandments to the people, but they needed to be prepared for them. And so at this point in time, in the way in which we are, you know, following the children of Israel, they've already been redeemed from Egypt, okay? And they've already begun to have a personal relationship with God. God is has revealed himself to them. He has begun to, you know, establish a relationship with each one of the people. And, you know, as I've said in the past, that, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, all the patriarchs, you know, they had, you know, a personal relationship with the Lord, and the Lord revealed himself to them and he spoke to them and so forth. But this generation of people that came out of slavery here, they didn't have that relationship. So they've developed that relationship. The Lord's redeemed them. And it's only after the Lord has done those things that he then gives his law. And so, therefore, what's going on here is, you know, this law was not provided to them to take away sin. You know, a lot of times people think of the law as something that you do to make yourself right with God. If I follow the Ten Commandments, then it will make me right with God. And many times when you talk to someone, you're sharing the gospel with them, and you ask them, you know, if you were to die today, you know, where would you spend eternity? And they would say, oh, I know that I would go to heaven. And you'd say, why? And they'd say, well, I keep the Ten Commandments. And but the reality is that the law was not given to produce salvation. The law was not given to take away sin. And we can, one of the ways in which we can see that in terms of typology here is that the law was not given at the time when the children of Israel were in Egypt, when they were in the world, when they were in bondage to sin. God did not say to them, you know, when they were in Egypt, here are these commandments, and if you keep these commandments, I will deliver you out of Egypt. It was not given to redeem the people. It was given after they were redeemed. They were redeemed, if you recall, in that very last plague, they were redeemed by the blood of the Passover lamb. And so it wasn't until they were already out of Egypt that the Lord provided the Ten Commandments. And so the question then becomes, you know, sort of what's really then going on there? The Lord is providing his law to them as members of his family or as citizens of his kingdom. They were to become servant people to God as just like a king. And so the analogy is similar to when if a king were to acquire servants, you know, in these ancient times, there were at least two ways in which a king or a wealthy person could acquire servants. One is through war, and the other would be through purchase. And when those either of those things occur, they would belong to the king, and they would become part of that kingdom. And so that was an important thing to understand. So think of it, you know, if you were a king and you went and did war and did battle and you took certain people alive, you didn't kill them, then they would belong to that king and they would owe their lives to that king. Likewise, if you had a king or a wealthy person who bought someone out of slavery, let's say there's a person who owed a big debt or something like that, and someone went and paid that debt off on their behalf, then that servant would owe their life to them. And so they would become, if it's a king that's doing that, these servants would become part of a kingdom. Or if it is a wealthy man, they would become part of a household. And so when that would take place, then you would have the king or this wealthy person saying, okay, you're now part of my kingdom. Here are the rules that you are to follow to be a citizen of my kingdom. Or you are now a part of my household. Here are the rules that you are to follow as being a member of my household. And so he gives them, and so here God, in this exact example, he's giving them these statutes and these ordinances that they're to live by because they are going to be part of his kingdom. And he's doing so because he wants them to be different than the other nations. And it really does go back to the promise that God made to Abraham that that his seed, you know, his that he's going to make a great nation out of Abraham and his whole all of his descendants, and they would be a blessing to the nations around them. Of course, you know, when he's talking about the seed, he's really talking about the Messiah, about Jesus, and him blessing the whole world. But likewise, the nation of Israel, when the Lord provides them with the law, they're going to be able to go before all the other nations, and they're able to demonstrate they're going to be different. They're going to be holy. They're going to be set apart. They're going to show that there is only one true and living God, and that he is to be worshiped a certain way, and they're going to be demonstrating that before the people in keeping not only these Ten Commandments, but the other commandments that will come later on. And so with that background, let's open up and look at chapter 19 and see how God instructs Moses to prepare the people to receive the Ten Commandments. So verse 1 of chapter 19 reads, "In the 19th month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai." And so here we see that this is in the third month, you know, after they had come out of Egypt. And it is computed that the law was given to the children of Israel 50 days after they came out of Egypt. And this is the reason why in remembrance of the day when the Lord provided the law to them on the 50th day, that Israel had the Feast of Pentecost. And that was observed 50 days after the Passover. And so you can kind of see how all of these things are fitting together, and also how all of these things point to Jesus, because we know that even after, you know, in the New Testament, we read about, you know, it's so interesting how there's so many parallels and connections even to, you know, the book of Acts, which we're going through on Sundays. In chapter 2, we learn that the Spirit of God was poured out on the apostles on the day of Pentecost, which was 50 days after the death of Christ, who was the true Passover lamb. And so here we're seeing, you know, these various things that are being established here. We see that this is taking place here, that where they are at this point in time, they're in the wilderness of Sinai, and the wilderness is really a desert. You know, it's not like what we think of when we think of a wilderness with a bunch of trees and stuff like that. This is a desert place. We see here that it's speaking of this mountain of Sinai. And this Mount Sinai is a place that naturally stood out because it was the highest of all of the mountain ranges in this area. And so it was it really did stand out. And God selected this place for a reason. He basically wanted to set this place up where he would be delivering the law, where he would be meeting with Moses, where he would be high above this barren land. And so it was really symbolic of the power of God. You know, he shows up and he does things even in the midst of barrenness. And he is above all of that. And, you know, that whole sort of picture is something that we see all throughout the Old Testament, you know, like even in Isaiah, where, you know, it talks about like a root, you know, how the idea is that, you know, like in Isaiah 53, that Jesus, you know, when he shows up, he's going to show up at a time when there's just this time of silence. You know, there's a period of time, you know, between, you know, like when you had the prophets in the Old Testament, when they sort of last prophesied until the time when Jesus shows up, there's a huge period of time. And so there's almost like, you know, the Lord was silent, or there's this barrenness that is taking place, but then all of a sudden this root comes out of nowhere. And it's wonderful to behold, and that is the Messiah. But in any event, this again is just a symbolic of the greatness of God, even in the midst of barrenness. We learn also as we continue on in these first five books of the Bible here, that they were camped here at Sinai for about, they will be here for about 11 to 12 months. And we're gonna see here what takes place in this as we continue on here in chapter 19. So verse 2 says, "For they had departed from Rephidim, had come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain, and Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, 'Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell to the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all the people, for all the earth is mine.'" And so here, there's quite a bit going on here. The Lord is speaking to Moses. At this point, he had gone up onto the mountain of Sinai, and the Lord is now giving him instructions as to what he would say to the people. And the first thing that he says is that he wants to remind them about what he did to the Egyptians. That was a great show of strength and power on the part of the Lord. And so it's something that the people of Israel are never to never forget. But the key point here is just that all of the people in this congregation, this 2 to 3 million person congregation, they were all eyewitnesses to what the Lord did. This is not about something that they heard about. This is something that they experienced themselves. And so the Lord is building a case, in a sense, because he's going to provide the law to them, but he's also, in essence, giving them the reason why they should agree to follow the law, right? Basically that, you know, he's worthy of being followed here. He goes on to say, you know, sort of not only what I did to the Egyptians in bringing all those plagues, in parting the Red Sea and killing all of those soldiers of Egypt, but it says, he says that he bore them on eagle's wings. And this is really sort of an expression of the tenderness that God showed towards them. And it also is talking about the manner in which the deliverance was accomplished. And so when we think about an eagle, we think about speed, you know, the fact that an eagle can fly and can move quickly and also can move with ease. It was easy, it's easy for an eagle to move in a powerful way. And it also speaks of strength. And so these are all of the things that are pertaining to God, that he was able to deliver the people from Egypt, and he's able to do it quickly. He was able to do it with ease, even though there was a great show of power and what he did was amazing. It was easy for him to do. And it also, it showed his strength and his preeminence over all of these false gods that were worshiped in Egypt. And so it also, as I said, you know, it represented God's care for them and their affection for them. And so there's a lot of, you know, symbolism here. And so, you know, Egypt was like a nest. You know, we talked about how Egypt was a place where the Lord, by design and in his perfect plan, he took the people of Israel to Egypt. And he accomplished that through, you know, what happened with Joseph. Joseph's brothers meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. It was his plan that they would be in Egypt where he would grow them into a large nation. And so in essence, Egypt was like a nest where God's, you know, young ones were first formed as an embryo of the nation, and the Lord grew them up. And once they were grown to maturity, they were carried out of that nest. And so that was that. That's really the symbolism that's going on here. But now it goes at the end of verse four. It says that he brought you to myself. And so the point here is that not only did the Lord set them free, you know, it would be one thing, it'd be like, you know, you can have a picture of, you know, some animals that are in captivity in some way, right? And you could open up a gate and you know, if they're birds, you just let the birds fly away, you know, or animals, they just run away. And so, but here, it's not that the Lord just liberated the people of Israel and set them free. He brought them to himself. His goal and his desire was not just to set them free, but to ultimately enter into a covenant relationship with them, a relationship of communion with them. He wanted to bring them back to himself from a place of revolt against God, and he's bringing them home to a place where, to the only place where they can really be complete and happy as a people. And so he starts out by saying, you saw what I did. You were eyewitnesses of what I did in bringing you out of Egypt and bringing you to myself. Verse 5 goes on to say, now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And so here we see a really amazing thing being said here by the Lord. He's saying that if you would obey my voice now, that he's going to do something. And what he's saying he's going to do is he's going to make them a peculiar treasure to himself. But the thing about it is that we know already that everything belongs to the Lord. And that's what is said here in the very last clause of verse 5, for all the earth is mine. And so it's not that God was enriched by them, like he was made to be a richer, you know, to be richer because of the fact that they now belong to him. because all things belong to him. But instead, he is saying to them that you will be precious in my sight. So among all of the people or all of creation, all that is exists that is seen or unseen, he's going to look at them as being precious, a precious possession. And so he is saying, I'm going to take you under my special care as a treasure that would be kept under lock and key. So it'd be like if you had many different kinds of treasures, but then there are certain things that you just put away in a safe place or in somewhere that was locked or what have you. That's what the picture is here. And so he distinguished them from among all people. And so that's what he's saying here. So it's really an amazing thing that he's saying. But you notice there's like sort of that if there, you know. So this is really a covenant that he's making here, you know, if they would obey his voice. Verse 6, it says, "And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel." And so he goes on to say that they would be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Kingdom of priests would be to say that, you know, each person in the kingdom would be a priest. Each member would have access to him. So all of the Israelites, as compared with all the other people, were to be priests to God, which means that they would be very near to him. They would be able to approach him, and they would be involved in his service. They will be involved in doing what he commands them to do and in serving them, and that he would have intimate communion with them. So he would have this relationship that would be special that no one else would have. And he goes on to say that they would also be a holy nation, meaning that they would be morally pure and dedicated entirely to the service of God. And so the bottom line is that the Lord is making clear that he redeemed them so that they would be in touch with him and that they would be separated to him. So it's a special kind of relationship. And of course, this is all leading to the Lord giving them the law. And the law, of course, is given to them so that they would be distinguished from others, and that they would be set apart as a holy nation. And so we also know from the New Testament in 1 Peter that all believers through Christ are made to God to be kings and priests and a chosen generation and a royal priesthood. This is what the Lord does with regard to believers. We have a special relationship, you know, and sometimes we just, we read those words or we don't even remember about these words. And we just take for granted the position that we have in Christ. But it is very special to the Lord. And so here the Lord is communicating to Moses to tell the people that if they do what he's commanding them to do, they're going to be placed into a special position with God, privileged position. Verse 7, "So Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before them all the words which the Lord had commanded them." Not only when it says that he laid before their faces, it's that not only that he explained to them what God commanded, but he also, we're going to see, is he's giving them a choice as to whether or not they would accept the promises on God's terms or not. And so one of the things, the principles that we see in this is that the Lord is not, you know, the Lord is a gentleman. The Lord is not like overbearing. He's not going to make you enter into, you know, a covenant relationship with him. You will do that if at all, on your own volition, you know, because you want to, not because the Lord will make you do that. And so that is a hallmark of God and his relationship with people. And so that also is the spirit in which we, when we are, you know, sharing the gospel with people, should have the same sort of spirit and same sort of approach and attitude with other people, that it's not something to be, you know, forced upon. It's something to be offered, and you know, explaining, you know, what it means and what the benefits are, what comes from it, you know, what the consequences of denying it are, but never to be forced or you know, on anybody. And so it says here that he laid before them, you know, he it means that he put to their faces, or he put it on their conscience, you know, to hear and obey the words of the Lord. Verse 8 says, then all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. So Moses brought back the words of the Lord, words of the people to the Lord. So in a way, it's like Moses was serving like a lawyer or something, you know, between the Lord and the people. And we see here that the people were very enthusiastic about it, and they were very sort of confident about their ability to do exactly what the Lord was commanding here, that they would be able to obey. And they just said, you know, they weren't negotiating back and forth or anything. They just said, all that he said, we will do. And, you know, obviously they understood the, you know, what it really meant, what the Lord was saying about making them a special people, and how valuable that was. And they were all for it. Verse 9 says, and the Lord said to Moses, behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak to you and believe you forever. So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. And so notice here in verse 9, the Lord is telling Moses that when he appears to Moses, that he's coming in a thick cloud, and he's doing that on purpose. He's doing that so that the people would look and they would see that, and then also they would hear my voice when I'm speaking to you. So when Moses was there on Mount Sinai and he's speaking, the Lord made it so that they could hear what he was saying, so that they would believe and they would basically have trust in him. So they would know, hey, this man, he speaks, you know, he stands before God face to face, and he's speaking to God, and the Lord is answering him, and the Lord is, you know, and so that he did so that, again, he would build the trust in the people. Verse 10, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. And so here they're beginning to really sanctify themselves, set themselves apart. This is to basically, they're now being called out of their worldly life or worldly business, and they're called to meditation and to prayer, that they may receive the law from God's mouth. And when they do so, they would receive it with reverence and with devotion. And so it says here that they were to wash their clothes, and this was to represent that they were cleaning themselves from all sinful pollutions. And it was symbolic, not of just their clothes, but really of the washing of their souls by repentance. And so again, they are separating themselves from impurity. They are consecrating themselves to God. And they are, and what they're, all the things they're doing here is really to show the significance of this event where the Lord's going to give them the law. And so they're making themselves ready for what they would become. And so they are to become, you know, this kingdom of priests and this holy nation. And so in washing their clothes, it's like they are doing sort of outwardly, you know, what is going to happen to them in reality. So verse 11, it says, "And let them be ready for the third day, for on the third day, the Lord will come down upon the Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. You shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, take heed to yourselves that you do not go up to the mountain or touch its base. Whoever touches a mountain will surely be put to death. Not a hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot with an arrow, whether man or beast. He shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they will come near to the mountain." And so here he's saying, set up a boundary here. And who knows, it may have been a ditch or something around the foot of the mountain. But the point was, is that there would be some kind of boundary so that people would know not to come near, but they were to stay at a distance here from this mountain, because on the mountain was the presence of God. And so this really was representative of the reverence which we should have towards God, right? And that the Lord wanted to the people of Israel to have towards him. That there's a certain distance at which worshipers were to be kept away. And I'll say during this dispensation, right? So during the Old Testament, God made this clear to them all the time that about his holiness and the reverence that they would have towards them, that they were not fit to come, you know, before his presence, that they needed to keep a distance as they were worshiping him. And so this is recorded here, and it's emphasized, like I said, all throughout the Old Testament, there are examples, there are laws that are given out, and there are examples of people who they suffer the consequences of not keeping themselves at a distance in this way. And this is, like I said, it's set down so that we as Christians now in this new dispensation, the dispensation of grace, that we can take note of how privileged we are under the gospel, that now, as it says in Hebrews chapter 10, we can come boldly, we can have boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Jesus. And so there's, this is one of the reasons why we don't just confine ourselves to the New Testament. We read the Old Testament so that we can really see these things and you know, these contrasts and understand the value of what the Lord provided to us when he shed his blood on Calvary. And so again, this is just a very vivid reminder to the people of the great, chasm that exists between God and man. And so the Lord says, you can't touch this mountain, don't have anybody touch it. If they touch it, they're gonna be surely put to death. And even in verse 13, it says, like, if someone were to touch it and you would put them to death, you couldn't even touch that person. You would stone them or you'd shoot them through with an arrow. And it doesn't matter if it's a man or a beast, he says they shall not live. So it's a real sort of significant major thing. And so verse 14, it says, so Moses went down from the mountain to the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said to the people, be ready for the third day. Do not come near your wives. And so, again, they weren't to engage in sexual relations during this period either. Again, another show or act of consecration. And so now then it brings us to verse 16, and now we're going to see where it basically it's the third day where the Lord is going to come and he is going to appear to the people and he's going to speak to the people. And so we're going to see what that looks like. So verse 16, it says, then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain. And the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And so we see here this awesome display here, this awesome display of the presence of God here. It's happening just as the Lord said. It's on the third day, and we see these thunderings and these lightnings. We see a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that the people were trembling. They were afraid. This was a major thing that was going on here. And just to imagine that here we have this large congregation of, you know, 2 to 3 million people. And there's never been before this or since this large of a group of people that are gathered together to hear someone preach. And this is God himself preaching to this large group of people. You know, just imagine just how loud that voice must have been to be able to be heard, you know, from this mountain, and all of these people to hear it all. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Verse 18, now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke and God answered him by voice. And so we can see again, you know, just this whole display of what's going on here. It's just the sort of the awesomeness of God, the power of God that they're seeing here. And it's really to show the greatness of God, the seriousness of what's going on here, for them to experience something that they would never forget. And here we see something in verse 19 that's interesting, that Moses is going to speak here and then God answers him by voice. And so again, the Lord did that on purpose so that the people could see that, you know, Moses was truly God's servant. He was, you know, and so they were to listen to him. They were to trust in him, that he would have, that, you know, the authority and the respect of the people. Verse 20, it says, then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And one thing you'll notice, you know, we can see in going back to verse 3, it says, and Moses went up to God. Verse 14, Moses went down. Verse 20, Moses went up. And so Moses is going up and down this mountain. And as I said before, this is a very high mountain and it wasn't easy to climb. And Moses was 80 years old. And so he's going up and down and up and down this mountain. But in any event, verse 20 says, the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mountain and he went up. Verse 20, it says, and the Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish. Also, let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. And so here, as Moses is before the Lord is saying, hey, you need to go back down. So he called him up, and then he tells him, you've got to go back down and warn the people. And verse 23, Moses said to the Lord, the people can't come up to Mount Sinai, for you've warned us, saying, set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. So the Lord, Moses is here kind of arguing with the Lord or debating with the Lord and saying, like, oh, no, it's no big deal. You know, remember, you warned them not to come, and we set that boundary around there and everything. Everything's going to be fine. But the point is that the Lord knows the people way better than Moses will ever know them, right? And so if the Lord, is telling Moses this, or the Lord is telling anybody anything, it's something to listen to and to obey. And so verse 24, we see the Lord says, then the Lord said to him, away, get down and then come up, you and Aaron with you, but do not let the priests and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them. And so the Lord, after reasoning with him, he just says, look, enough is enough. You need to get down there and tell them, because these people are going to do harm to themselves if you don't go down and talk to them. And so this brings us to chapter 20, and we only have about 10 or 15 minutes. And so what I'm going to do is just read the first 18 verses here. And then we can really sort of meditate on this. And next week we'll come back and really dig into these commandments that were given by the Lord to the people. So verse 20, or chapter 20, verse 1 says, and God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, anything, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witnesses against your neighbor, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. And so those are the Ten Commandments, and it's going to be exciting to really dig into these and really understand what, you know, how they're organized and what they truly mean. And so we will close right there. And please read ahead, meditate on those Ten Commandments. And as we return next week, we will go through them. We will begin to go through them in detail.